Well, good evening and welcome to the Kansas City Public Library. I'm Henry Fortunato, Director of Public Affairs. And what's tonight's lecture? The perils of packaging? No, actually. We're very, very grateful tonight that we have... Oh, right. Thank you for reminding me. Always a good idea to turn off your cell phone. Saul Sender's appearance in Kansas City is part of the first annual KC Design Week, an initiative of the new KC Design Alliance, which is a collaboration of design-related professional associations. The activities of this week are intended to call attention to the talent-rich ecosystem of designers in Kansas City and the impact of design on our daily lives. It was planned by the American Institute of Architects in Kansas City, the American Institute of Graphic Artists, the Industrial Design Society of America, and the American Planning Association. These organizations are great partners to the Kansas City Public Library because together we can bring you programs like this. Zach Schupkegel will introduce Saul Sender. Zach is VP of Brand Experience with Willoughby Design Group. He's a multi-talented taskmaster with 10 years of experience developing strategic design and communications. He is a leader in the local design community and serves as president of AIGA Kansas City. He's a founding member of the Kansas City Design Alliance. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Zach Schupkegel.
Good evening. Thank you. And thanks again, Henry, and the Kansas City Public Library for hosting this event for Kansas City Design Week. We really appreciate it. AIGA, the American Institute of Graphic Arts, is proud to be one of the hosts for Kansas City Design Week. Our goal this week is to highlight the impact of design as it has on our businesses, our community, and our culture. Throughout the week, we encourage you to encounter design in all of its perspectives. Yesterday, we challenged architects, designers, fashion designers, engineers, to develop a solution for harvesters to make their operations more efficient. This was part of our design challenge. And we had six teams, and it was a great, fun experience. Just one of the events that we're having this week. This morning, we listened to Peter Park talking about how government can positively impact urban development. And that was at UMKC. You can visit our website at kcdesignweek.org to learn more about the rest of the week and to tweet. You can use the hashtag KCDW for those who tweet and share your comments. We're looking forward to doing this for years on end. This is only the first year. So please share with us your comments, your feedback, and hopefully if you'd like to volunteer for next year, let us know. I'd also like to give a big thanks to all of our sponsors throughout the week, and we have several. I can't go through them all. Please go to our website. And check them out, and please use them whenever possible. AIGA is comprised of graphic designers, predominantly, not entirely, and we design websites, packages, signage, experiences, communications, and brands, among other things. And our challenge is to visualize the qualities and essence of brand into something we can all remember. To recall some of the most successful brands, one might recall Nike, Coca-Cola, Apple. And over the last few years, a new iconic brand has been introduced that literally brought change in a way we can all appreciate, regardless of political affiliation. It is my pleasure to introduce tonight's speaker, and as founder and principal, Sender LLC, Saul Sender spearheaded the logo development for Barack Obama's historic 2008 campaign. Now an associate partner with VSA Partners out of Chicago, he works across disciplines to impact the communications of some of the world's most valuable businesses and brands, including some right here in Kansas City, including water.org. Prior to founding Sender LLC, he spent 7 years with Design Kitchen as senior designer, VP brand strategy, and president. Over the course of his career, his work as a designer and strategist has been recognized by several publications, including Communication Arts, HAL Magazine, AIGA, the American Center for Design, the Art Directors Club, the Society of Marketing Professionals. He was recently a keynote speaker at the Aiko Grata World Design Congress in Beijing, and has traveled the world sharing his experience. A faculty member at the School of Art Institute of Chicago since 1999, his articles on design history and design education have been published and distributed by Allworth Press. It is my pleasure to introduce to you all Saul Sender.
Thanks very much to my hosts and the AIGA, and a real pleasure and honor to be part of Design Week here in Kansas City. I wanted to share with you, tonight I'll share with you a little bit about how this all came about and the process that we went through developing the logo, and then look at some of the ways in which it evolved during the campaign and even afterwards. But I wanted to start out just talking about the logo a little bit. We've gotten lots of great compliments about it, and I have had the opportunity to speak to lots of great audiences because of the work we did for the campaign. But there's really nothing revolutionary about the logo from a formal perspective. It's not groundbreaking in form or color or composition particularly. But what was revolutionary about it, in our minds at least, was the way in which it was used. And this is a quote that I liked very much, talking about what revolutionary design might be and how it doesn't have to do with manipulation vanishing. It has to do with putting manipulation in the hands of everyone. And that's really something that did happen with this logo. And we were very proud to see it evolve that way. So whether it was signage on lawns, different demographics, industry, there was a little mini industry that grew up around Obama cookies and other things. Again, different demographics owning the logo to really demonstrate their commitment to the candidate. Bibs, Midwest, football games. This one was in Alaska. There was a whole pumpkin thing that emerged with a website. Yes, we carve. Not officially sanctioned by the campaign, but I think appreciated nonetheless. This is one of my favorites. No one's yet stepped forward to lay a claim to this, but definitely one of my all-time favorites. You know, with corporate identities and consumer brands, what usually happens is that you really try to protect it, whether from an intellectual property perspective with your attorneys or what we call the logo police when we work with corporations. And the idea is to prevent people from sort of compromising the integrity of the logo and transforming it in ways that make it less ownable or less consistent. But over the course of the campaign, we really found that we needed to let go of that idea. And this is a perfect example of that. On one level, perfectly horrifying, something you'd never want to happen to a logo. But on the other hand, really charming and allowed people to express their support and also to put David Hasselhoff in there occasionally. But there were literally tens of thousands of these on this site. We got the assignment at the very end of December in 2006, and the way it came about was that I had a classmate at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and his name is Steve Juris, and Steve was working for a company named Mode, and they're a motion design firm in Chicago, but they also had done a lot of work doing more traditional video commercial work with David Axelrod's group. And so he approached them at the end of 2006, asked them to do some preliminary work for the campaign, and he said, could you also do the identity? And they said, well, we don't really do identities, but we could bring in a partner. So Steve called me and told me about the project, and we sent over a couple logos that we had done in the preceding months, and that was it. I think it really fell in our lap. We didn't have to compete for it. It was really, you know, remarkable in that regard, and we were super excited, of course. One of the first things we did was go out and look at sort of the history of presidential campaign graphics. There wasn't a whole lot to be impressed by. In recent history, especially, it was pretty gray in terms of, you know, not being a whole lot of difference between Democrats and Republicans. Generally, stars and stripes, and blue and red and white, and varying degrees of good and bad typography, mostly bad. Looking back further, in the 60s, there was some more creativity with the Hubert Humphrey campaign, and the Goldwater campaign I don't have on here had the AUH2O sort of slogan, which was pretty creative. And of course, we wanted to benchmark Jesse Jackson's campaign in '84, being the first African American candidate with a significant part of the popular vote. We just didn't find a whole lot here that we really wanted to be inspired by. The campaign did point us to one thing they wanted us to look at was the Harold Washington campaign for mayor of Chicago. He was the first African-American mayor of Chicago, and they felt that this was something different, that they wanted us to do something different, and they felt this was something different. We didn't really think it was something different, but nevertheless, it just so happened that in the end, you know, they did share a common kind of iconography and this idea of race. I think also President Obama was very influenced by Harold Washington, so that may have been another reason why they wanted us to look at it. The other thing that we did was we read both of the candidates' books. With the main goal there, we knew about him. He was the junior senator in Illinois. He had not been the senator for that long, but I had heard wonderful things about him, not just politically, but as a person. So we sort of dove into these books looking for platforms to build upon. When we develop logos, we do take a particular approach, and one of the first things that we seek to do is to build a story. And the reason why we do that is often because when we do logos for corporations or organizations, we don't want to put the leaders of the companies in a position of having to describe typography or color or geometry. It's not something that most people are comfortable talking about. We want them to be able to very simply state what the logo is saying, and we want it to be meaningful and authentic to what their organization stands for. That's really one of our key criteria. The other thing we look for is a stylistic resonance. At any moment in history, there's a particular kind of style, a vernacular that is particularly popular or impactful in the culture. And we want to capture that, but we also want to balance that with a timelessness. So that question of how we are both contemporary and timeless is a key one. And then finally, easy enough to say, but very difficult to do, impeccable execution. A logo has to do so much with so little, and it has to do it in every aspect of its execution. So that's our third criteria. When we look at building stories, we look for key ideas to build upon. And we were given some by the campaign, you know, something new. Hope and change were already something that was a key message that was emerging. One of the key ideas that we got out of the books was an idea of of not red states and blue states. And it's interesting to look back at that now, because in the first year of the president's administration, you know, perhaps some of us were a little disappointed in his inability, not purely his fault, but to reach across the aisle. And it's interesting to see that in recent weeks, going to meet with the Republicans, the House representatives, that I really felt actually that that was, I was really proud of that, and I felt like that was an activation of the promise of his campaign that perhaps we hadn't yet seen after his election. Other ideas, you know, we were interested in a multiculturalism, a dream realized, you know, specifically referring to Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech, A New Day Rising. So these were all ideas that we were kicking around when we developed the sort of first set of logos. And this is just some of them. Generally, it takes us, I'd say, 5 to 7 weeks to develop 3 to 4 logos that we are pretty happy with and can stand by should the client choose one of them. In this case, we had a much greater output in a much shorter period of time. I think we were all very inspired by the assignment. We had a strong sense of what the candidate's message was and what he stood for historically. And as a result, we were able to develop quite a few options quickly. Not all of these ended up being presented to the campaign, but quite a few did. And quite quickly. So within a period of days, actually, we were zeroing in on the ones that we felt were strong candidates. So one of the platforms we built on was this idea of unity, of red and blue coming together. We looked at it, you know, sort of simply with three circles forming an 08. And, of course, the idea of O was something we were always playing with from the candidate's name. We looked at an O with red and blue coming together in a number of different ways. This was another one of them. Red and blue coming together in an exclamation point, perhaps a little too Olympic-like, but we liked the idea. This was a little bit more abstract, trying to express unity, sort of a more typographic execution. This one, unity being a bit more multicultural. Had we gone in this direction, I think we would have worked on the star that was formed in the negative space between the hands. But we liked this. In the end, we didn't think it was probably quite the right key message. And I think that's been proven out to some degree that race or ethnicity has not really been something that the administration has wanted to concentrate on, though clearly in terms of historical significance, it was one of the key things that was going on around the campaign. Hope was, of course, another idea that was central from the start. We thought maybe hope could be expressed by something rising or something emerging, and perhaps the 8 could also feel like infinite possibilities. We always thought that the B and the 8 might have a kind of formal relationship, and certainly the 0 and the O, so we played with that in a lot of different ways. We thought hope might be expressed as a kind of window to the world where through the O or the of the candidate's name in 08, we might see different possibilities. We felt with this idea, had we gone forward with it, that photography would have played a key part here in terms of capturing the promise of the candidate's vision, whether it had to do with education or other aspects of his message. And we knew all along that we might find ways to integrate language in creative manners. This emerged very early on, and we certainly felt this was a this really stood out from the start, and we felt that a sun rising was a kind of universal symbol of hope, and we were able to bring it together again with the O of the candidate's name, and we thought that was pretty powerful from the first moment we saw it. Change was probably the third key idea that we were looking at, and this was one execution of it, a kind of people calling for Obama, people calling for change, excitement about the potential for change. And then we thought again, we went back to this and we thought one of the strengths of this was that it crossed these platforms. So it really could stand for hope, it could stand for change, it could even really stand for unity. That was one that we zeroed in on. In terms of the finalists, these were the finalists that we sort of agreed to look at with the campaign. These were the ones that they were most excited about. And as we moved forward with them, we wanted to look at ways in which they might be executed out in the world. So bumper stickers, of course, were something important to look at from the very start. This was one that they liked. We thought perhaps, you know, it was a little too sophisticated, maybe. That was probably the weakness in my mind of that one. But you know, as we looked at it in different applications, we certainly thought it had a strength to it. And this idea was another one that the campaign was excited about. So again, we looked at it in these different iterations. How might it work with different types of language? Whether it was about education or voting or benches or billboards and bumper stickers. And then this was one that the campaign was very excited about. This was probably the runner-up. We did think if that was going to be the case that we wanted to strengthen it, so we looked at the color palette a little bit more, trying to introduce more powerful colors and a little more dynamism. And again, looking at it, and this one had some nice creative applications when you started looking at it in these different places. I liked this one particularly. And of course, this was a finalist, so. We also knew that this one really was rising to the top, so we immediately sort of wanted to look at how it might work more broadly. And with any identity, we wanted to look at some sort of key variations on it. So what happened when the logo's big? What happened when the type plays a more prominent role? What happened when the logo's to the left of the type or part of it? And then again in these different applications. One of the strengths of this idea also that we were always excited by was the potential for it to stand alone, independent of the candidate's name, to symbolize one's support for his candidacy. And that was something that we had not seen before. And we thought that would be really great if the campaign ever got to a point where that could happen. And we really, I mean, I was skeptical that it would ever be able to be used this way. I'm not sure if it was because we weren't totally clear whether he had a chance to get the Democratic nomination, or we just thought, oh, nothing's been done like that in presidential politics. But, of course, ultimately there were pins that were very much like this. So we were pretty much done with the logo on by January 8th, and this was the one that we recommended. We did adjust it slightly. We thought maybe this was a little too symmetrical. Maybe the landscape, the red stripes, could become a little more dynamic, allow the viewer to sort of enter into it more, and we thought that would be a little bit stronger in terms of denoting a kind of American landscape. But the reason why we recommended it, one of the key reasons was we felt that we knew that the candidate was already being criticized from the right for being, or I don't know if criticism is quite the right word, but being accused of being unpatriotic. They were calling him Osama on the radio, certainly the question of his experience. And we just felt, though, it was important to do something new, and that was a key criteria for the logo. We thought it would be a mistake to walk away from a red, white, and blue and a traditional vernacular. So we felt that one of the things that this logo did was that it really straddled that line between something new and something traditional. And as the campaign proceeded and looking back now, you know, there was the whole blow up around the candidate wearing a flag pin or not early in the campaign. And I think it was useful to have a logo like this playing a role as a kind of rear guard against attacks like that. But of course, you know, the other reason why we thought it was so strong is just because it captured so perfectly this idea of hope and change and a new day rising, which meant so many things, a new day rising in terms of how politics could be in this country, but also in terms of the candidate being potentially the first African-American president. And we just thought it really worked perfectly in a lot of ways. So we released the logo suite. We knew that the gradient on the left, which sort of communicated the sun a little bit more forcefully, and also when I talk about stylistic resonance, this one had a little bit more of a kind of Web 2.0 feeling, which was important at the time, we felt. And it worked well in digital applications, always worked well on the internet, but as it turns out, it was very difficult to manage its production and printed materials. And so we knew that a two-color version on the right was going to be very important. We also knew that these different sizes, relationship with the typography, would be key. And we did a very, you know, we didn't have a lot of time, so we did a what we would consider to be a very simple guidelines, probably around 10 to 12 pages. We communicated sort of general unacceptable usages, whether it was changing the type or changing the colors or rotating the logo. Of course, we couldn't foresee everything, and in fact, there was one key thing that we missed here, which was a little unfortunate at the beginning of the campaign. We also showed different applications and how it could be used. And so the candidate announced on February 3rd in Springfield, and the signs and the logo were everywhere, and it was really gratifying to see it. We were maybe a little bit upset because the color of the 08 had been changed. There had been a white line added around the logo. The logo was being dispersed all over the country to different vendors of different sensibilities and sensitivity to typography and graphic design. And when we saw the podium, we really got upset. And this is when I stopped hearing the announcement and got on the phone. The idea that the center of the logo could be knocked out and changed in this way completely changed the symbolism, and now we have the dark star rising, which was really not something we wanted to do. So this was the application that we sort of failed to call out in the guidelines, and this was something that had to be sort of protected against as much as possible throughout the beginning of the campaign especially. Nevertheless, you know, we were pretty pleased with the way in which the logo stood out amongst the key competition. People do ask me about the McCain identity occasionally, and I would actually say that it was not among the worst historically. If the candidate's platform had to do with his military experience, it certainly achieved that. And in fact, the typeface that was used, Optima, is the same typeface as the Vietnam Memorial. So there was some thinking there, and it wasn't half bad in that regard. Interesting about Hillary's was that it did, I realized later, have a family resemblance to Bill Clinton's identity previously. And we began to see all sorts of different uses of it. That was very gratifying. Sometimes we saw things that we were okay with. Other times we saw things that we weren't okay with. But it was amazing to see it immediately start propagating pretty much everywhere. We were involved for a period of months supporting the campaign, trying to get them everything they needed, doing T-shirt executions. But ultimately, it became clear that the campaign really needed to bring in an in-house team of designers, which really was a first also. And my team, which included the key members of my team were Amanda Gentry and Andy Keene. We handed everything off to the campaign, and the campaign brought in two very talented designers, Scott Thomas and John Slabik, who did a wonderful job executing all sorts of material and developing some really wonderful variations on the logo. One of the things they did, which I thought was a very solid move, was they changed the typeface from a Perpetua to a adjusted Requiem. And they made that white line around the logo, which the television people, among others, claimed was essential. They made it more purposeful. So now it had a little bit more of a harmonious relationship with the white stripes inside the logo. The whole shape became more triangular and a little bit more pleasing in that way. So they made some wonderful moves to the core mark itself. But then they did these really great variations, which in the hands of less talented designers could have been real disasters. But John especially worked on these, and these were, I think, pretty universally admired by designers everywhere. And he really did them for almost every demographic one could think of. And, you know, what this did was not only, I think, appeal to all these different demographics, but give a kind of tacit permission for them to make the campaign their own. And I think this was a kind of precursor to lots of the creative things that people did with the logo. And so they would take something like this and, you know, really use it out there. And even Republicans for Obama. which really did get used, just, you know, we were sure to capture it in the wild. They did a wonderful job on the website. You know, this is where the logo, I think, really got to shine, literally, with that kind of Web 2.0 sensibility. This was one of the first campaigns, in fact, was the first campaign that really capitalized on the web and really capitalized on social media, which, looking back now, I was speaking last night to a group of students at the University of Kansas, and when I said, oh, this was the first time social media was used in this way, they just kind of gave me this blank stare, because it's clear that, you know, the younger generation, you know, just takes it for granted that social media now is standard. But at the time, you know, the idea that one would create a YouTube channel and really brand it to the degree that one could, given the technology, this was a first. And they did a great job of making sure they could do whatever they could do to impact it, they did. So whether it was the YouTube channel, LinkedIn, which provided a little less opportunity, but nevertheless was kind of executed perfectly and allowed you to connect with Barack and, you know, the way you should. And Twitter, again, limited capabilities, but done just right. Facebook. And the iPhone application was wonderful. The other thing the campaign did was, initially there was a lot of sort of guerrilla activity around artists doing posters and other things. It started appearing almost immediately. Ultimately, the campaign sort of embraced this and commissioned a lot of artists to do posters. So whether it was the Shepherd Fairey stuff that's a little more familiar in the left-hand corner, or all this other wonderful work, this is just a small sampling of the kind of creativity that surrounded the campaign. And as we approached, you know, election night, of course, we needed some fantastic tickets that would be super memorable and keepsakes. And then on the night of the victory in Grant Park, I love this photo because prior to that night, I think Grant Park was most well known for the riots in 1968 at the Democratic Convention. And in a lot of ways, if you covered up the logo, you might have, or the sign, you might think this was from 1968. But I think now, you know, Grant Park will also be forever remembered for that night when so many tens of thousands of people were there to witness that. The logo lives on, of course. It's now used by Organizing for America, which is the grassroots organization that continues to build momentum around the administration's agenda and continues to be adapted for various platforms, in this case, healthcare. This was obviously a couple months back. Other things we saw after the campaign included things like this, which charming. But you know, one of the reasons why this happened and people used it and in all sorts of different ways is that you could go directly to barackobama.com/downloads, and in fact you still can, and you could download all of this material in its original form, the logo suite, you know, various kinds of icons, posters. It was all there to download. It still is. And I think that was another strategy that was employed to perfection. The thing about symbols, though, which are complicated, I mean, very powerful, and I think, you know, the symbol did a lot for the campaign and galvanized supporters, and you know, logos can really do that, and symbols can. But the problem with symbols is, especially when you don't protect them and you let all your supporters use them however they want, you can't really protect it from your critics. So the symbol can become a powerful vehicle for criticism as well. So this is another thing that we started to see. And, you know, from it varied from troubling, but maybe sort of fair game, to sort of more troubling. And then, you know, all the way to sort of beginning to be deeply disturbing in terms of, you know, it being a kind of symbol of fascism, which was really strange and weird, all the way to, like, you know, deeply disturbing with these very complex, strange, complicated racial metaphors that didn't really make sense, but in the end just left you with this awful feeling. And then, you know, things like this. So, you know, that's the thing about symbols. When you employ them, you know, there are two sides to their power. It was interesting thinking about that. I spoke in Berlin, and I, you know, thinking about the way in which the logo was used that way, and some people have, you know, compared it to other sort of historical things. And I thought, well, it's interesting being here in Germany. I was on the eve of elections and looking at what the candidates were doing in Germany. And what was really striking in Germany was there was, like, no branding. You know, a few dots, nothing, sort of strange color palette for the far right that kind of felt a little disturbing. A little teeny three pieces of color there. And that was really striking about the German campaigns is there was no branding. It was so quiet. And it became evident that the Germans, they just couldn't ever do anything like what we did for the Obama campaign because it was too painful, the idea that a logo or a symbol could have that much impact politically. And nevertheless, I mean, they loved Obama for the most part. In Germany. And after I gave this speech, Eric Spiekerman came up to me and he said, you know, you're absolutely right. I did that work for Angela Merkel. And I thought, oh, geez, I'm sorry. But, you know, he said, no, you're really right. You're right. You know, we just couldn't do it. So I thought that was interesting. And then this was another. And the other thing I was just looking at recently, I was trying to think about this whole Scott Brown thing that's been really important and just taking a look at the kind of stuff they've done. You know, certainly some elements there. I don't have the screen without this sort of splash, but there, the way in which they employed social media, clearly social media is, you know, there's a benchmark now that all campaigns have to rise to in terms of how that's used. And then looking at GOP.com, really, fascinating to see this. I mean, I think a very focused effort on branding, their own O's, and employing some of the strategies that were employed by the supporters of Obama. and doing a pretty decent job of it, for better or for worse. The other thing that I get asked a lot, you know, coming out of this is, can design change the world? And did your design, you know, change the world? Did your design get him elected? And you know, the design, I always tell people, the design was only as powerful as the candidate. You know, if it had been any other candidate, it wouldn't have mattered. But this was a candidate that meant so much, and so the logo came to mean so much also. And it was that kind of relationship between the logo and the candidate that made it so successful. More broadly, thinking about design we can believe in, this was a Ralph Kaplan wrote a book, and this was something that was brought up at an AIGA National Conference, this notion that he wrote about how the perhaps one of the greatest designs of the 1950s was the sit-in. And I thought that that was really interesting. You know, it was a design of a system. It was perfectly executed. It was intensely purposeful. It worked on so many levels and ultimately very successful. And I thought that was interesting, you know, thinking about design more broadly. Yes, we're graphic designers, but design is a way of thinking and a way of problem solving. And I thought also about this notion of branding, and there's been a lot of sort of negative energy about branding. This was a manifesto by a number of wonderful designers from 2000 talking about how branding was really, you know, we all have to do it, but it's really corrupting, it's changing the way we see the world, and we should really all be doing more work for museums and nonprofits, and all true, but I think sets up, I say the latter part is true. It's great to do that work for nonprofits and museums, and but it sets up a kind of duality, which is either you can work on branding or you can make the world better. And I think moving forward in the coming decades, in the coming years, we're really getting to a point where it has to be both. And what's exciting is that it really has to be both. In other words, you can make the world better and you can make a lot of money doing it. And until that, those two things come together, it's never really going to happen. And I think designers can be successful on both fronts. It makes me think about microloans, for example. This is Kiva website. They could use some help with their branding. But as a system and as a website, microloans are a wonderful idea. And, you know, rightly so, the man who sort of brought them forward won the Nobel Prize. Amazing notion that one could help the world, but also do it in a way that was sort of financially cohesive. And the payback on these loans are incredible. And then this is the client that we have in Kansas City, water.org. There are lots of organizations committed to helping developing economies get clean water. One of the unique things about water.org is they do it with microloans. So it becomes a sustainable solution. We help them with their logo, but I think it's the way they approach the problem which really speaks to design in a broader way. And then finally, a client of mine now, interesting that IBM has sort of combined their social responsibility message with their business strategy. We can make the world smarter. We can make a lot of money doing it. We can be committed to making the world smarter. We can watch our stock price, you know, rise as the economy is in general not doing as well. And they mean it. You know, it's not just they mean it because it's going to be successful. Anyway, this is how I think about things. I don't want to be didactic about this stuff, but I think it's interesting. The administration putting out transparent sort of data that designers have an opportunity to translate into information experiences. Again, something IBM is going to be doing with a City Forward project. And that's it. Thanks very much for having me again. And I'd be happy to take some questions if there are any in the audience.
Thank you, Saul. That was really great. We do encourage you. We have plenty of time. We do encourage you to ask questions, but we encourage you to ask questions, not make speeches. So Saul will pick from the one side to the other until we're done, and we look forward to hearing what you have to say.
I've got a good voice.
Yeah, could we, did I meet President Obama? Sadly, no. We worked with David Axelrod and presented to him, and I guess the president is a good delegator when it comes to graphic design, so he trusted their decision. I do know that he saw the designs and that he generally approved of the finalists. I think that we, for better or for worse, we sort of stayed on the outside of the campaign. We never sort of crossed over from agency into the inside. I still hope to meet him. We're saving some material for him. I don't know why he can't have the logo designer to the White House. You know, clearly he doesn't have anything more important right now, but.
I'm not sure at what point in the campaign this may have become relevant, but the PepsiCo people came out with a very similar looking logo, and I wasn't sure if that ever influenced or you heard about that or you knew, and what was your reaction to it if in fact that did come your way?
Those poor Pepsi people, that was really bad for them. You know, I don't think actually that, I don't think that that was their intent or even I don't, as a graphic designer, I actually don't even think there's that much of a relationship between the two. I mean, it's not like Pepsi didn't have red, white, and blue for decades. They really, or even the shape, the circle. So I just think it was an unfortunate coincidence for them. They did, they didn't prevent it. They kind of encouraged it because there were actually some signs the weekend of inauguration where they rolled out the new logo, congratulating the president and using it in the place of O's. And, you know, that didn't help matters. But I know a lot of people feel like it looks a lot like it. I give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't think that's what they had in mind. But the general public, I think, had a kind of different feeling about it. So,
How tough was it to hand your design over in the end and to be manipulated any other way? And also, any thoughts on 12? Will they keep this, or will they come back to you for something different?
It was painful in the beginning, you know, especially that podium. It was kind of upsetting, and but you know, when they brought in Scott and John, again, those guys were really talented designers, made us feel a lot better. And from a sort of official campaign perspective, they did protect it. I mean, they executed it very well. And then the instances when people did what they will with it, those just became, I think, to me, they became sort of more charming and guerrilla. As long as the campaign wasn't, you know, sort of making those fundamental mistakes with it, I was fine. And again, really quite pleased with some of the moves they made. You know, initially when people asked me that question about 2012, I thought, well, you know, it could go either way. I mean, there's a lot of equity in that logo, so maybe it would be a mistake to walk away from it. On the other hand, the logo meant hope and change, a new day rising. Is that really going to be the message for 2012? I mean, should there be a logo where the sun is halfway up? And, you know, but even more now, I feel like it perhaps is not the best way for the campaign to go. If hope and change is the platform for 2012, I think we're in real trouble. I think if it doesn't transform into action and accomplishment, it's going to be a problem, and it would be a real weakness to maintain that logo. I think there'd be a real opportunity for the right to sort of zero in on that hope and change message in a negative way. So that would be my, you know, my perspective on it. We'll see what happens there, but you know, maybe they keep it for Organizing for America, but the campaign itself does something different.
The Scott and John that he referred to, were you guys given an opportunity to develop it further, or how does that work politically?
We did some of the initial executions for T-shirts and so forth, but honestly, there was a lot of confusion. You know, it was like spread out everywhere. A lot of people had their hands on it. We kept on trying to release guidelines. We did a poster. I don't know who got ended up getting it and who didn't end up getting it and so forth. Scott claims to me now that we never even saw any guidelines. And I got a message from Scott, you know, right when they were taking over about something. But I think, you know, I think it was a good move on the campaign on a number of levels to bring in an in-house design team. There's a lot of young, talented designers who stayed up, pulled a lot of all-nighters. That's not something that older designers can do quite as well. And the agency structure, also, you know, there's a real inefficiency there when you keep on going to the agency to do that stuff. So it was more of a, I'd say it was more of a baton handoff, and we were okay, you know, just letting it go at that point. We felt like we made the contribution we wanted to, so.
So you were aware of that handoff? I mean, were you given an opportunity, you personally?
Were they asked us to come inside the campaign? Yeah. No. Uh-uh. No. No. I mean, the other side of that story is that we were a small firm, and we kind of needed the PR, so I wasn't bashful about, you know, claiming we did the logo, and there was some press, and the campaign was a little uncomfortable with that, and, you know, one of the things that emerged was, you know, there was a kind of criticism of the candidate being a brand and being too slick, so we kind of adjusted our message, and we talked about the campaign being a brand, but I think all in all, they would have just preferred that the logo designers, you know, didn't talk much. And so I'm not sure, at that moment of transition, I'm not sure I was at the top of their list in terms of favorite people. So,
well, thank you for coming.
I'm wondering about your thoughts about, like, the coming political logo wars that we might be inundated with now that American politics has discovered branding officially. And what 2012 is going to look like, necessarily.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there was a gubernatorial candidate in Maine who did a kind of knockoff of the Obama logo, and a Republican candidate, and you know, got a lot of criticism for that. And I think there's going to be a general awareness of there being a kind of new benchmark in terms of a brand and how media gets used on the internet. I don't think that... I think there'll be aspirations to that, but I don't think, unless you have a real transformative candidate, I don't think there's going to be a real opportunity like this again. The one opportunity I would say might be the first woman who gets elected president. I would think that there would be a great opportunity there, perhaps, to do some wonderful work. I don't think that Hillary Clinton was sort of the mind to go out and sort of take that risk. Graphically, but perhaps there would be an opportunity there. But yeah, there'll be logo wars and branding, and I mean the GOP is doing a decent job, and but you know, I just believe that this was a special moment, and you know, we were lucky enough to be part of it, and we found the right logo for that moment. So,
Saul, one last question: given what you've accomplished here, are candidates flocking to your shop now asking for logos, or is this you're going on to other things?
I do get inquiries, and it makes me a little bit nervous. I always ask them to send me their platforms and, you know, what do they believe in, and I mean, for two reasons. One is I don't want to do work for someone who I don't believe in, and I also would need to know what they stand for in order to do a decent logo for them. Most recently, like, we got an inquiry from the Dominican Republic about some political movement there, and I think all in all, it just makes me uncomfortable when I don't know. You know, he was our junior senator. I had a real feeling people I knew had met him, you know, and so I had a real sense of trust about what he stood for. It would make me nervous if I didn't have that kind of connection to it. So.